Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. How are you all doing? It's another week. It's another episode. Another episode recorded in lockdown. Hopefully by the time this comes out, lockdown's easing off a little bit. Oh, I don't know. No one's got any answers at the moment, have they? But what is quite a positive in this situation is lots of my friends that happen to be musicians or podcasters, I've all got a little bit more time at home. And so I just thought I'd have a little ring round. And I'd ring round some of the guests that have already guested on the podcast. So the other week you missed an episode, or hopefully you heard an episode with James from EMF. And I'm doing the same today with my guest, which is my old buddy Dan Lesac. So I've known Dan for 20 odd years. And Dan was one of the first ever guests on Off the Beaten Track. And we obviously discussed all the songs that soundtrack Dan's creative journey. So since the launch of this podcast, Dan's obviously released his own podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network, Falling Forward. We discussed this on the episode. And it's a catch-up with Dan, and I like to do these live gig specials where instead of songs that have soundtracked your creative journey, I want to talk about gigs. Gigs that you've played, gigs that you've attended, festivals and such, tours, tour supports, and just get a feel for that side of thing. And it was an opportunity for me to catch up with Dan again as well, which is always lovely. Before we get on to the episode, big shout out to Dan's old partner in crime, Mr. Scroobius Pippikins, and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Also, can I suggest that if you haven't checked out the first episode with Dan, go and do that. And while you're having a little look around the archive, then go and check out some of the others, because there's some cracking episodes. In just the last few weeks alone, I've had guests such as Andy Bell of Oasis and Ride. I've had LaRue. I've had Idols. I've had White Lies. Go and have a little rummage around in the back catalogue and see what you can find. And if that's not enough, then I also put out unique episodes each week on a Patreon page, and there's video episodes on there as well, loads of stuff. So you can find out about all of this by just going to offthebeatentrackpodcast.com, and you can find out we can get merch and all that sort of stuff. I'm doing some plugging, sorry. I know you just want to just get on with the episode. And also, if you still haven't reached your quota of podcast listening and you want some others to listen to, if you've obviously exhausted the Distraction Pieces Network, why not go to podbiblemag.com, which is the magazine put together by myself, Scroobius Pip, and Adam Richardson, and it's your go-to guide for all things podcasts. It also has a podcast as well, that comes out every week, which is hosted by me, Adam, and Pip, and we speak to all of your favourite podcasters about their podcast and the podcast that they listen to. Head over to the website, podbiblemag.com, read it online, see what you make of the mag. If you really want a print copy, then for the price of a second-class stamp and an envelope, we'll post one out to you as well. So I think I'm done with all the plugging. Should we get on with the episode? Please enjoy this live gigs special during lockdown with the super ace, Dan Lesac. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fairwear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whippin. Okay, hello and welcome to Off The Beaten Track podcast. Starting that again. Hello and welcome to Off The Beaten Track podcast. It's a live lockdown special, and joining me today via the means of Skype, which he kindly re-signed up to. It'd been a redundant account for many years. Is my old buddy Dan Lesac.
Hello, how are you doing?
You all right?
I'm good. I'm just checking our hit record. I did definitely hit. Yeah, it's ticking up. It's fine. Science. Good. It's all very complex.
So, how you been finding lockdown, Dan?
This is normal. This is just normal life, Stu. This is how it works.
Are you saying you're quite reclusive?
Yeah, not deliberately. I just didn't notice that I was quite reclusive, and like, I don't know. Like, most of my mates have like lives and stuff. So, you know, they're off doing things.
Sure.
And then, because I work from home.
Yeah.
And the wife's out in the States. Yeah, this is just normal. But I do miss humans. I miss talking to other humans, like in person. I miss their smell.
Well, before we get on with the episode, I just wanted to say that you... got back together with Pippi Kins last night and done Tim Burgess's listening party. How was that?
That was good, actually. Yeah, hang on. Yeah, no, it was good. Like, I was a bit nervous because I don't think either of us have really listened to the Dan and Pip stuff in some years. So, yeah, I was actually nervous that it was going to be shit. Like, genuinely, like, is that how many good? You know, and we chose Repent, Replenish, Repeat, the last one, because it's the one we both have the best sort of feeling towards, best memories of. But at the same time, that could have been because that was when we were at our peak, like sold out shows, massive tours. So maybe I was worried. I was genuinely worried that it was like a false memory that the album itself was actually decent. But no, it was good and people were nice and stuff and friendly and all that. No one cried. Pip might have cried. I don't know. He got offline pretty quick afterwards. I think he was...
He had something in his eye.
Yeah. I'm not crying, you're crying.
Yeah. Well, you was one of the first guests on Off The Beaten Track. I believe you was in the first... Definitely in the first 10, I think, when I set this podcast up. And so... For people that haven't listened to that episode, go back and check that one out. That's Dan talking about the songs that have soundtracked his creative journey to date. But I just reached out to Dan because I've been doing a few episodes with past guests, just wanting to reconnect and hang out. And
it's just easier.
It's always
they're going
nice
to say yes.
It.
They said yes once. They'll say yes
exactly.
again.
Exactly. Of course. And so I thought we'd do a live show special to talk about some of the gigs that Dan has been to and some of the gigs that Dan's played at. And it's always nice to see you, Dan, because we've been friends for probably 20 years?
It's got to be 25, yeah. I used to come to the Bullseye at like 14.
18,
yeah. Yeah, 18. I was 18 for a long time, about 4 years.
Well, all right, Dan, well, look, what I want to know is, to start with, what was the first live show you remember going to?
Like, what counts? Like, that's the thing. Like, what counts? Like, the very first ever, ever live gig with a band on a stage, I remember, was New Year's Eve when I was, like, 11 or 12 at the Billet, late at the Rainbow's End in Stamford, and it was Chaz and Dave.
I mean, that's a great start.
It's a good one, but, like, I didn't choose to be there. I was a kid. I just wanted the buffet and, like, someone to let me play darts. And they wouldn't let me play darts because I was a kid.
I mean, that night, is that night the most manly thing you've ever done? Add cockles and mussels on a buffet, throw some arrows and watch Chaz and Dave in Stamford.
In Stamford, yeah. I play darts now and again. I like a bit of darts and a pie. I like pies. You know?
What can you remember about it, aside from the buffet?
Mate, very little. Look, you know the stupid Peter Kay gag with kids sliding about on their knees?
Doing
I remember
skids.
Doing that a lot.
Yeah.
I remember that and being told off because I was being disrespectful to Chaz and Dave. You know. But this was before they had that big kind of revival because they were always quite... the Rabbit guys, but I think people forget they were like proper musicians and stuff, and they knew all the old standards and things. I went to see them not that long ago, like a decade ago, in Newbury, and I would have been 30 at the time, and I was a youngling by a long way in that room. But they were doing all like Vera Lynn and all this. It was all very pretty, and then they had a little break and came back and did all the sideboard song and all that.
Yeah.
Weird. With my mate Mike, I remember, who I only knew through listening to like Gabba. So it was just weird. It was a weird night. It was good though. I like Chaz and Dave.
Yeah.
Whichever. I think it's growing up in Essex, isn't it? I think you have to.
I think it's a rite of passage. Chaz Hodgie's book is a fantastic read. Like he's got some background. He really has. Some of the things that he's done. Obviously the famous Eminem sample as well. Was Chaz Hodgie's.
Yeah. The Labby Siffrey sample.
The On My Name Is.
I think that's Labby Siffrey, yeah, which Chaz and Dave were on as
session.
That might be a Wu-Tang one, actually. They're on a few. They're on a few classic hip-hop records.
Yeah, he was he a session guy for... Was it Mickey Mouse? Was he the... I think it was in... that's where Chaz Hodgie's was one of the sort of in-house bands.
I'm going to say I don't actually know, but I'm just going to say definitely Mickey Mouse. Yeah definitely. Like back at the session studios. I remember.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, definitely.
What was the first gig that you went to that you went off your own accord?
Like, feels weird, but maybe it was Honeylust.
Oh, really?
I think so. I don't know. It's really confusing, man. Because, no, I know what it was. it's very different to Honeylust. It was Julian Cope and the Osric Tentacles in that London.
Wow.
In that London. It was my first ever gig in that London. With me and this kid Adam, when Adam King, his name was. And we both wore tie-dye. And we were like 15 or something. And it was... some charity thing for Newbury Bypass, against Newbury Bypass. They weren't trying to build a bypass. But yeah, it was a weird night. And we got there. I think it was Kentish Town Forum. So obviously it's got a balcony. And Adam, foolishly, when they said standing or seating, chose seating. So it was just us two on the next balcony looking down at like hundreds of people really like enjoying it. And we were just up there, 15-year-old kids. Neither one of us wanted to say... idiot, we should have gone downstairs.
Yeah, you know? Of course.
But it was fun, man. It was fun. I remember that. I like, I don't think I really liked either Julian Cope or the Osric Tentacles, but I like, if I hear them, I still have warm feelings, you know?
Sure. I've done a little radio show yesterday. It was literally, I played a track called Beautiful Love by Julian Cope on it yesterday. It was the first time I'd listened to Julian Cope in a long time. And he's made some great records.
Well, I think it's weird. I think we forget just like how much music he wrote and how, I don't know, he was part of culture. But because of the patchouli oil and the hippy dippy stuff, I think we just write him off. You know, there's a lot of bands like the Levellers and stuff like that, where we just put them in a sort of smelly hippie box. But they influenced huge amounts of people, like bands like the Levellers and that. With the, I cannot remember what that festival they had out by Marlborough, but they had a festival that ran for years and years. And these are huge cultural things, but because they don't get on that their radio. No, we don't think of them in that same way.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, I generally start this podcast off when we talk about music with songs with the greatest ever intro, and to go back to Julian Cope and his, you know, the early stuff with Teardrop Explodes, Reward has got one of the greatest intros to a record ever.
Yeah.
Like the urgency and the call of arms at the beginning of that is fucking incredible. Okay, so for question two, Dan, what was the first live show that you performed at?
This, I don't know. This sounds weird. Like,
you must have been in a shit metal band at some point before you teamed up with Pip.
Nah, like, literally, I think my first ever live musical performance was in the Palmer's College, like, social room with like, Alex... This kid Alex, and just like me with a delay pedal, just playing that too much, just making walls, like thinking we were in Mogwai, but he liked the blue tones, sort of thing. Like, weird.
That's,
you know what?
Fucking awful.
I've been in like three bands in my life that were me wanting to be in Mogwai and everyone else wanting to be in the blue tones. It's weird. Always. There was one that we did a gig and they dubbed us the Deacon Blue Tones, which was just beautiful.
I mean, why does that band not exist?
I know. But yeah, there was that. But then, like, the first gig where I was actually, like, in a band was me and my mate Fraser did one gig together at Reading South Street. I don't even remember what we were called. I think we were either called Borealis, like the Aurora, you know, or Lava Experiments or something, which was his name. But yeah, now me and him like spent like a year writing songs together, working, rehearsing, and it was
he into the blue tones?
No, thankfully not. No, this was a lot more like shoegazy but with drum machines, you know, so a bit bit trip hop but very shoegazy.
So obviously you still wanted to be in Mogwai then?
Always. Never not wanted to be in Mogwai. I spent the whole of me and Pip's career going, I wish I was in Mogwai. Or New Order. Either of those will do. I want to be Peter Hook or Stuart Braithwaite. I don't mind which.
I mean, it was quite nice that your Tim Burgess listening party was on the same night as New Orders as well, I believe.
I know. They were supporting us. You know?
Yeah.
So originally we were going to do it earlier in the week and it would have been Belle and Sebastian supporting us. But I felt New Order were a more fitting support, really.
Give them a break, mate. Give them a break.
Yeah. But yeah, no, yeah. me and Fraser did this one gig. And then his mum's husband, not his dad's, his mum's husband passed away and he moved back to Scotland, which ended our band's career. It's very rude. Very rude, you know. So the weird thing is, though, I wrote this bit of piano music for Fraser, like, and it was sort of a happy but nice piece of music, sort of inspired by loss and all that emotional stuff. And somehow along the line, when I started working with Pip, because I only started working with Pip like at end of that year, I accidentally sent him Pip it, and Pip turned it into a sexy massage ballad, which was the bonus track on Angles, and I feel uncomfortable about it every time I think of it to this day.
I feel very uncomfortable thinking of the word Scroobius Pip and Sexy Massage.
He did write a Sexy Massage song, Reading My Dreams, it was called. So creepy. So creepy.
So what was the first gig that you and Pip done?
It was, so I don't know what the venue's called now. On Tottenham Court Road, I think it was called Bowery something, for not Bowery Ballroom, because that's in America, but yeah, the Bowery or something. But it wasn't called that. It was called it was a Barfly venue right by Centre Point. Right underneath Centre Point. And Pip had booked to a gig with Dan Sartain. Mm-hmm. And Dan Sartain pulled out. So Pip asked me if I would jump on. And I said, yeah, all right, yeah. We'd written a couple of songs together. So he did Spoken Word with the piano man, Pete, Big Pete. Mm-hmm. And then we did like two songs together. And then I did a little set. So that was the first time we did it. And that was to like nine people. There were no more than nine. And two of those were my friends, Mike and Alexa. So they don't count. When your friends come with you, like literally walk through the door with you, they don't count. So that was the first time. But like the first, I don't know what a very first gig was. Maybe it was the Barfly. Not the Barfly. What's it called? Little Portland Street. Food up.
Oh, Borderline.
No, not the social.
Heavenly Social.
Is it? Oh, it's, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
It's that, the social, isn't it?
Yeah.
With like a John Kennedy one. But yeah, it's really hazy. Because it might have been, what was that club night in Grays?
What, the Surfer?
The Surfer. It might, like, that would have been maybe not the first, but we did the Surfer, the Fat Surfer. Mm. Remember that? But yeah, vague. Super vague. Like, I'm really...
What's your first memory of, like... And
of Pip?
And I say this without wanting to sound too much like a wanker, but, like, the first gig you played where you thought, wow, this is a proper gig. This is what I kind of thought a proper gig would be. You know, you had a rider and there was a big crowd there. What was the first one where you thought, fucking hell, this is exciting?
Do you know what? I think, like, it was things like Camden Crawl.
Yeah.
When we were doing those shows and they were, like, huge. Like, we had... we played the Camden Underworld on one of those and they let way too many people in. There was a big stage invasion and all that. And that was probably only like 4 months after Thou Shalt had happened on the radio. And it was like, wow, this is a real thing. This is an actual gig. Oh my God, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that kind of blew me away. But we had the delightful thing of having that gig. And I think we'd done the Barfly the day before, which was rammed for John Kennedy. And then we did a third gig on the Saturday night at Bloomsbury Bowling Lane. Mm-hmm. For, they weren't our label at that point. They were, it was Sunday Best, but they were going to be our label. And it was fucking empty. It was trash. And Pip was hammered. Pip was really drunk from the Underworld show, literally hours before. So he kept, like, faking that the mic wasn't working, but he just could not remember his lines. He was just like, every now and again, he would just stop and tap. It was proper embarrassing.
Brilliant. Yeah.
It was good though.
Brilliant.
I had fun.
Well, let's talk festivals. What was the first festival you went to?
First festival I went to.
As a clubber,
Reading
festival goer. Reading.
Reading festival. Yeah, I went for one Saturday with my cousin Billy and my cousin Sharon. The year New Order came back, so like 97, and they came back and did. It was just before Rob Gretton died, so they were coming back to do what they were calling Recycled. So I think they were going to do a big kind of re-envisioning of the Joy Division stuff and all that, and then Rob Gretton died, and they just didn't. You know, they just went back away for a couple of years. But yeah, that was my first festival, and it was mind-blowing to me. It was like so busy, so many people.
So you must have been, what... 18, 19 then? Like, maybe even older?
18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't been to a festival before that, like, ever. But like, I wasn't the most socially, like, linked. I think when you were younger, you only get to go to festivals if you were in a group that are going to go. You know, you're not going to go by yourself at 16 or whatever.
I mean, I remember you when you was that age. You was a popular lad. You was always had a...
Oh, it's not that people...
Gang of people.
It's not that people didn't like me. It's that I didn't like them. Everyone was an arsehole, Stu. Come on, mate. I was a snob, mate. If they hadn't read Camus... I hadn't read Camus at that point. But you know what I mean? I was just... I didn't really... At school, I found it weird, because everyone liked Nirvana. And I was like, well, yeah, not as good as Joy Division. Who are these Nirvana upstarts?
Yeah.
And, you know, the pretending... I wasn't into...
Do you know what? You're in dangerous territory of sounding like a wanker there, but I can verify that I know you're not lying. I know when you was like 14, 15, you lent me the best of Joy Division. I've still got
permanent.
It.
Yeah, you've still got permanent. Cheeky. Yep. I bought it again, Stu. I knew I was never getting it back.
I've cherished it, Dan. Don't worry.
It's probably still got the HMV stickers on it or something. No, it was just, I think, because I had older brothers and I had my cousin Billy. I look up to my cousin Billy a lot, and he's more than 10 years older than me. So he was running around Basildon when, I don't know, like Dave Garn was still working in Next. You know, he's that generation. So, obviously, I got all of that Factory Records, all the Mute Records sort of influence hoisted upon me. And my brother Sean just liked happy hardcore. And my eldest brother Neil liked New Jack Swing. He liked Boys to Men and stuff, which are fine. But none of that really connected with me. So, I think all my musical influence came from the generation before. And then, yeah, when people at school were talking about Pantera, I was like, it didn't connect with me in that same way. And I do think Depeche Mode being from Basildon meant a lot. Like, wait, these people can go play stadiums, and he used to work in Next. That's crazy. That made me understand that you could be in a band and have some success.
Yeah. And they're still doing that.
I don't know how Dave Garn's not dead yet. So impressive, man. Right, well done. He's embalmed himself. He's ready.
So, what was the first festival that you and Pitt played at?
I'm so bad at this. I, like, literally do not know.
You was there, you knob.
It's got to be... It must have been Camden Crawl. It has to be Camden Crawl. That can be the only one, man.
Did you do, like, In the City and Great Escape as well?
Never did In the City. We definitely did Great Escape, but it wouldn't have been Great Escape because that's the month after Camden Crawl. There was some city festival in Middlesbrough, which I cannot remember the name of. I think that might have been before it, but, you know, like, literally, I think we did the city festivals first, and then after that, it was such a blur. We went from, you know, we did a few gigs in like that December. Pip had obviously got mates with Kate Nash and all the poetry lots. So we did a few of those gigs. And then nothing. And then it just blew up. And all of a sudden we were doing everything. Like, I was thinking about it. Forget that we played the Surfer. Our first gig outside of London was Amsterdam, you know? Like, it just expanded at such an exponential rate that whole first year is such a confusing mess.
Did that just rocket off the back of Radio getting hold of Thou Shalt?
Yeah, yeah, everything just went for it. You know, Radio got hold of Thou Shalt and were on it, and that managed to carry through for 3 months, which is unheard of, for us to then release the actual single of it, which carried us all the way through the summer. And then we didn't release another single till the September. So from Radio getting it that December, we didn't do a new thing until the September afterwards. And somehow that momentum carried through. And the album was another 6-7 months after that. We were slow, but we were just so busy. We just kept getting offered shows. You know, we first tour was, yeah, that September as well.
That was just your first proper tour?
First proper tour, yeah. Everything before that was just, where are we now? What are we doing? All right, we'll do that gig. We'll do that gig. Just saying yes to every gig. We toured, did a mini tour in Amsterdam, in Holland, sorry, in the Netherlands even. Holland's a part of the Netherlands. It is not the whole, as they will remind you. We did like 4 dates there, like Rotterdam and Amsterdam, Utrecht and stuff. And then, yeah. But this, I think it's really hard to pinpoint, like, to pull those memories back. But, like, last night when we were doing this Twitter listening party, someone showed me, I'd signed, like, a wooden duck they'd put in front of me, and I'd signed it. And I remember signing it.
Really?
Yeah, I distinctly remember signing it. I remember the person I signed it for. I have warm feelings about that moment. Could I tell you where it was or when it was?
Mate, it's mad out of mind works, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just completely gone. I can tell you what gutter I lost my virginity in, but I can't tell you to who. I can, actually. I do remember her name. I just don't remember when it was. Towngate, mate. Around the back of the Towngate, innit?
Classy people in Basildon.
Oh, mate, you can find that gutter on Google Maps. I've done it more than once on live streams while talking about it. Like, well, this is it right here. See this gutter? Well, round the back of the town gate, they got like raised flower beds, like that, with brick. Yep. They're built out like bricks, so you can get in between the building and the flower bed, and it was just in there.
It's good. It's a shame we didn't know this conversation was going to unfold to this, because it would have been nice to have soundtracked it with Pip's sexy massage song. We can't do that. Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So, if you want to hear the songs, just go over.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. You've gone out and done your first tours, then am I right? Do I remember this right? You then, tell me about the first time you went as a tour support, because you've done extensive dates with Ronson, am I right?
So, yeah, we did. Well, yeah, all right. So,
was that your first tour support?
As an actual tour, yes. Mm. Yeah, I think before that we had done one-offs. So we'd supported, like, Basement Jacks. We did that. Mm-hmm. A room full of people at Brixton Academy going, when are Basement Jacks on? You know, that sort of thing. And I think by that point we'd supported Billy Bragg as well at the Roundhouse. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was the first time we'd gone on a tour.
How many bands can support Billy Bragg and Basement Jacks and their style lend it to both? It's fucking great.
Yeah, it's rad, man. I always think that. Like, when we did the Frank Turner tour support at Wembley Arena. Like,
that was with Billy as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, Billy, Beans on Toast, us, Frank Turner. That bill in any way, but the audience loved it. You know, we still get to this day people going, "Oh, I saw you at Wembley Arena. It was amazing." It's like, cool. We don't get anyone say, "Oh, mate, I saw you at Plymouth Pavilion supporting Mark Ronson." No one mentions that. But no, that was really good. That was actually a lot of fun because it was the scale of the production. Like, Ronson could not have made money on that tour. Even if he sold every ticket twice, he was like, "Oh, I want a horn section. Who's the best horn section?" You know, he would just...
Was that the Haggis Horns?
I think it was the Haggis Horns, and the string section was the Demon Strings. They weren't cheap. They were getting paid more than we were, I'll tell you that. But yeah,
Was that the tour where, like, there was some serious... Was all the vocalists going out on that tour as well?
All the vocalists, yeah. So, you name them, they turned up, you know. Adele had jumped up on the London shows, which were Hammersmith Apollo. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, just all around the country was various of the singers from that album. Obviously, that album was a big collaboration album. Mm. But it was really funny, actually, because we were booked to be main support. So we were getting paid accordingly, like two bags of crisps instead of one bag of crisps sort of thing. And the Rumble Strips were opening and their management had kicked up a stink and we were like, "We'll go first. It doesn't matter. You know, we're just happy to get out of the house." Yeah. And so they were touring. They were like four or five of them and their crew and all that. And it was like, hang on, you're getting like 50 quid to do this. And you're losing 500 quid a show to try to convince Mark Ronson fans to buy your Rumble Strips record. Why are you doing that? Just send the singer along with an acoustic. That'll actually be better for your careers, guys. But yeah, while we were rocking it up, hired out Jim's van for 70 quid a day. That included Jim.
Keep it simple.
Jim included.
Is there a band that whenever they tour, you still go and watch them?
I've seen New Order a bunch, like when I've had chances and stuff. But and obviously, like our friends, like B. Dolan, Sage Francis, I will go to see them every possible chance I get. Mm. Not just because they're mates, not because I've been at their weddings and stuff, but because they're good. They're like talented performers, and they have. I think maybe being British, like, it's nice to just see an American rapper with a bit of our sense of humour, but a bit of that American grind to it, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, I think the real answer is a lot of the bands that I would always see are the ones who don't gig very often. Like, I must have seen Godspeed You Black Emperor five times in 20 years, but that's actually the most anyone could have seen them in the last 20 years sort of thing, you know?
So in regards to, let's talk again about the sort of touring and stuff. Were there any bands that when you tour, either supporting them or taking them out on tour with you, like who were the bands that you enjoyed sort of hanging out with?
No, I hate them all.
Sure.
Just, yeah, genuinely. No, like, honestly, I always felt really awkward around the other bands. Like, the only time I genuinely enjoyed having a support was when me and Pip took Sarah Williams-White, who's a singer from That London, when we took her on tour and she did a set and then she'd be on stage with us. Because she was nice and there was no, like, pretension, and she wasn't trying to like sell records to us and all that thing. I don't know. I sometimes just felt a bit like bands have their big kind of, you got to put on that you're a success all the time. Mm. And it's like, well, no, you don't have to, because we're all sitting in shitty vans on the M1 driving to a gig where only 25 people are going to be there, you know? Come on, just chill. Like, but touring with Dolan as well, bringing Dolan on tour, I think partially because he's lovely. I love him to bits, but partially because it blew minds. Like, the audience were just like, this giant American dude shouting at us dressed as Evel Knievel, you know. It was just amazing. So, yeah, it's all of this. This one's harder for me than the songs one. Because the songs one I can like, think about and all that.
Yeah.
But this has been, like, I drew a blank on a lot of the questions because it is so blurry. Like, 1,000 shows in 7 years, plus all the shows I've been to in my life, you know, it's just like, what? I don't, you know, if I didn't get a hand job in the toilets, why would I remember it?
Sure.
Off pit. While he sings his massage song.
Well, there's a soundbite, John Harris. Okay. If you could go back and do it all again,
oh yeah, would you do, I'd be the singer.
And would you do it any different?
If I, do you know what? If I went, the real answer to that is the thing I would do different. And I think this is more on like a whole career thing rather than just the touring thing. Mm-hmm. The touring thing I loved. I would have just done more shows. You know, mm-hmm. I would want to do 2,000 shows, not one. I loved them.
What did you love about that? Did you like the attention? Are you a bit of a show off?
It's not that. It's a buzz. It's like, you get it when you DJ and you drop one of those, I don't know, pop songs like that, Arctic Monkeys or them, you know, or the Prodigy, those bands that they like, right, at the Brush, you know.
Yeah.
The Cure or whatever.
Yeah.
But you get it, you know, you drop a song and the audience goes off. Well, imagine dropping a song that you wrote and the audience going off. That's like a double whammy of like, I've done something right here. And that weird electricity that a crowd builds, you know, is so much fun.
Do you miss that?
Yeah, every day. Every day. Like, I said it last night. I miss it, like, properly every day. But I'm not him anymore. Like, Dan Lesac isn't... That's just a name of a brand from 7 years ago. I don't I don't work at Dan Lesac anymore, in a weird sense. Mm. Like, I really enjoy making really contemplative ambient stuff these days. So, like, I couldn't go back and do that sort of rocker party stuff.
Yeah.
But that buzz of gigging is definitely something that I'm glad I got to experience.
Yeah.
But the thing this is a bit of an Americanism, but I wish I was more present in my career. Like,
I think everyone says that, Dan. I really do. I don't think you're on your own there, mate. I think that's quite a common thing.
Yeah. There's just a bunch of things, like opportunities that came up that I got scared of, or like I remember randomly, Marcus Brigstock was a fan of me and Pip, and obviously mutually we were fans of him. And he invited us to his birthday party, just a little, his 40th, in a pub. And I was too scared, just too scared to go, man. I was nervous. I didn't feel like, I felt fat. I didn't know what to wear. All the things that you could put in your way. And like those little opportunities that Pip grasped. Pip, if someone offered Pip the opportunity to do anything that sounded vaguely fun, he just grabbed it. And not in a, like, a, this is going to be good for my career way, but in a, this is going to be good for me way. And, I do regret those things. I regret not being in the videos. I wish I'd been in the videos more. Like, I wish I'd kind of forced myself in a little more. It's difficult because you got the singer on screen all the time. But yeah. But
But you would have done what you thought was right at the time, you know. Hindsight's obviously a funny old thing.
The thing is, like, I didn't really grasp it until after Dan and Pip finished, but I was still dealing with a lot of mental health stuff that I hadn't, you know. For all my bravado and braggadocio, I was very nervous of new people and stuff, you know, all the time. Like, I remember we were playing Coco, and it was, I think it was maybe second album time, and it might have been final tours. No, it was second album time, and Simon Pegg was standing side stage, and I caught glimpse out the corner of his eye. The first thing I did was just smash my drink over. Like, I'm performing. We got 1,400 people in the room there, and the first thing I I would react quite viscerally to these situations. Like, I don't know. I was always very, I just think I do regret missing out on some of the fun. Yeah, at the same time, we had vast amounts of fun. Like, I did loads of cool stuff.
I think it's, you know, you always think, you know, personally, when I look back at, you know, what I had done in bands, you know, I was always worrying about what might be next and what you know, what could make this better, and not actually ever being in the moment, whereas everyone else in my band didn't give a shit about all of that, were just having the time of their life.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just naturally, you know, if you're someone that, you know, is quite focused and organised and ambitious, then you can't help but not think of, like, what could be next or what could be round the corner. And yeah, sometimes it's nice to just be completely carefree and just think,
even if you're not thinking about what comes next, even if you're just thinking about, I like this feeling, how do I keep hold of this, you know, can lead you to not really feel it, you know. It's weird.
Yeah.
But that said, like actually, yeah, when we went to Tokyo, we played Fuji Rocks Festival, and they lost our luggage. So we just long flight. I was covered in sweat. It was really hot. When I got my fattest. I was up to like 17 and a half stone and stuff. So I was feeling like a gross human being. And we like got off the plane, met our label over there. They had taken us to Wendy's for breakfast because Pip wanted Wendy's. In Japan, Pip. We're in Japan. Come on. And then, yeah, we were there for 4 days. One day was travel to the festival. One day was the festival. So we basically had one day to do anything in Tokyo. And I spent it asleep. And I am so annoyed at myself to this day. Like, because I felt unclean and I didn't want to walk around Tokyo like a big, horrible, sweaty mess and all this. I spent it asleep. And I was so annoyed because I'm never going to get to go back to Tokyo, you know? So, yeah. That sort of stuff, those little things like that, all those regrets. But I think it's good. If you regret stuff, at least you had the opportunity to do stuff.
Definitely. And as you said, if there's anxiety involved in that, that will take control of a lot of them situations and we'll put them barriers in place. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah. Then,
okay. So with gigs.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're talking about.
So with gigs and recording and releasing, like, what changes have you seen in the industry and in how you approach making music from when you first started out, you know, in Lesac and Pip to what you're doing now?
So, like, it's actually not as big a change as you would think, because we started, like, 2006, so not long before Spotify launched. We were at that bit where companies realised that social media, whether it be MySpace or YouTube, we often get called a MySpace band, but the truth of it is we blew up because of YouTube, because of the Thou Shalt video that Pip and Nick Froom put together, and it got put on the front page for weeks. It was on front page, so we just blew up because of that, you know. And this is when
I never knew that.
Yeah. And this is when, like, a million views on YouTube was like, holy shit, you know.
Yeah.
So We were at that bit. So obviously social media is still really important now. And live is still the way to make money. Like, we were at that bit where you could still make some money from the from music in the music industry. But so it's not changed quite as obviously. It's very subtle. But I think the thing that's changed is the bands that are doing well, especially if they're not making popular music, are the ones who embrace the fact that you have to be brazen. You know, when we're going to talk about Pip again, but when Pip's selling sunglasses on Instagram, that's what you have to be willing to do to sustain yourself. But you don't have to be an arsehole about it. And they're the bands who do well. Like, look, buy my stuff and I'll make more stuff. People are fine. It's just that you do sometimes get bands who are doing the, if you don't buy our stuff, it's your fault that we're not popular sort of stuff, which is annoying. But yeah, I don't think it's changed dramatically. I think the access thing, like anyone can very cheaply now record an album and get it onto Spotify or whatever without, like, if you've got an iPad already, you could do a full album recording, you know, like it, you can record bands and stuff and mix and master all within like a handheld computer at this point. So it's become quite democratized, which means that yes, more people have this opportunity to get their music out there. That doesn't mean more people have the opportunity to get heard, because there's only so much time in a day. You can't listen to every band, you know. Earlier today, I asked people to send me Bandcamp links because Bandcamp are doing their free, waiving their revenue today. And there's no way I'm going to get through all those links. And there's only like 30. You know, you imagine the amount of music that comes out every single day. You just can't cope with it. So our reliance on making it easier, you know, with Spotify, the real thing with Spotify is you're not paying Spotify for the music you listen to. And they're not paying the artist for that music. But what you're paying them for is the service of organising music for you. Here you go. We're going to friction-free slide you songs you might like, you know, without you having to waste an hour going, what should I listen to? I've made myself late for podcast recordings by standing in front of the CD rack going, what should I put in the car today? And stand there for 20 minutes going, I haven't heard that. Just take them all, Dan. Just take them all. Start driving.
And ultimately listen to Mogwai.
Yeah.
Or what's your favourite?
Or Nine Inch Nails, Downward Spiral. That.
Oh.
It's just, I can't not listen to that record. I must have listened to that thousands of times at this point.
Such what a record. Favourite venue?
Favourite venue, I always say Leeds Brudenell Social Club, which is an old working man's club up in Headingley. So it's in like a fairly residential area. Lots of old people wandering around. But then it's right by the uni as well. So loads of blue-haired students. And it's still a working men's club. But the son of the owner started putting on gigs. And now it's like a two-room... two-room venue, but with the bar, still with the old men in flat caps and dogs on a string type thing. Yet they'll have like Arab Strap in there, or me and Pip, or, you know, it's really good. It's a nice place. It's like Phoenix Nights, but with a good PA, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that place, that's the place for me. And like Nathan, who runs it, is a nice dude. You know, he's good and he's honest. And you can be a bit cynical about the industry sometimes. And when you meet, like, good, honest people, it's like, oh, wow, you're delightful. And the rider was always
never good. Trust a promoter then.
Yeah, never, mate, never. But, like, there's venues like that all over, though. There's a place in Utrecht called Echo, which has that vibe, like, family-run sort of thing. And, you know, there's loads of them around the country. It's just, I think Leeds one connects more, because when we got there the first day, I was like, oi, this is going to be awful. Look at this. Where's Peter Kay? And then it was amazing.
Well, let's hope that all them venues come out the other side of quarantine intact and continue to
fingers crossed,
continue to do what they do. Last question, Dan Lassac.
Thank God, eh? Thank God, guys.
Whew. If you could put on your dream lineup, festival or gig, five bands, and you could go and watch that gig, who would you put on?
Like, that's a difficult one. No, it's not.
Don't overcomplicate it.
All right, okay, so let's... We're going to open.
Oh, right, you've got your order as well.
We'll have to do it in order. I won't be all able right. to do it any other okay. way.
Nice, like, I'm liking this.
You know, so... Although he was a raging misogynist and he was an absolute nightmare, I want to open with John Martin just doing Solid Air, that album. It's a beautiful album. It's all about drugs and sex, but his voice is so pretty and folksy. So he's on first. Yeah, he's doing his thing. And then we need to change up the pace a little.
Where are you? You side of stage or you?
I'm in the crowd. I'm in the crowd, mate. But then we're going to just segue straight into A Certain Ratio. Because I like samba jazz myself. I do like samba jazz on Factory Records. A Certain Ratio, but doing a mini set. I don't want too much. They're a palate cleanser band to then pivot to New Order. New Order are going to come on. Greatest hits set. You know, although I'd like them to do Power Corruption Lies, I want a career-spanning greatest hits, New Order, big buzz. Oh, so that's three bands.
With Hookie?
Let's have Hookie for a bit, but then bring in that lad from Marion or Bad Lieutenant or whatever, yeah. And let's have them both, because he's a good bassist. I like him.
Can I throw a little thing to add to this gig?
Go on.
Can I add my little bit? Can we bring on Mar and Tennant and they bust out Getting Away With It?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, we can have side bands. If we're going to do that, we might as well let Monaco rock up and do, what was that song?
What do you want from me?
That one.
Did you ever hear the single after that called Shine?
I bought it.
Shine.
It's like right there.
Shine.
I don't remember
it. Shiny, it should have been a New Order single. It's pure New Order. It's brilliant.
Yeah. That was a weird band, Monaco. If you don't know who we're talking about, it's Peter Hook's pop side project.
With a singer called Potsy, wasn't it? I think his name was Potsy.
Or something, yeah. And he was a good singer. He worked really well. But, like, there was a bit of pulp in there as well, which I quite liked. But it was just that thing of, like, Peter Hook not letting go. You know, when he still hasn't. But that's life. So coming out of New Order.
Are they playing Joy Division songs in this set?
Oh, yeah, they'll probably play Isolation. They've always been playing Isolation. But they'll end on the atmosphere thing they do with the big screens and stuff, which they did
with,
at Festival.
With the Corbin video. With the video. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, which is beautiful. And then we're going to keep going from there. Aphex Twin, but he's going to start in the Ambient Works era. So he's coming out of New Order and we're all a bit exhilarated. He's going to come in slow and then build up.
Didgeridoo?
Yeah, keep it simple at first and then go all thingy with the lasers and the drones flying around. And then to close, Mogwai. Just have Mogwai. Or Godspeed You Black Emperor. I could not decide. I think Godspeed wouldn't quite fit. Mogwai could come in hard straight away, which is something Godspeed can't do. Godspeed have to go like, right, we're going to start with one viola, for an hour. Then we're going to add a cello for the next 20 minutes. And by the end of this one song that takes 3 days, it's going to be massive. I love Godspeed. They are actually my favourite band, but they're not easy to listen.
I've got to be honest, Dan, that's a fucking stellar lineup you've put together there, mate.
I think it'll work. It only cost you think about it money wise, it only cost you like half a million to do that lineup? What do you think?
Maybe.
How much checking New Order are these days?
I'm not sure. I mean, I've got a ticket that I'm hoping still going to be happening, but I can't see me getting to see them at the O2 in November. I don't know if that's going to happen.
It might. That's, you're in the realms of possibility, because that's people are talking about flights, international flights being back up by sort of September time. Rumours and all that. So maybe, I don't know though, man. I just want to get back to America so I can see my wife.
Yeah, so that's harsh, man.
See her breasts.
You was being all nice then, you had to spoil it, didn't you? Oh, dear.
I was going to talk about pixelation and stuff then, but... I only ever see a pixelated vagina these days.
So, since you've last been on this podcast, you've joined the network with your own podcast.
I have, yeah. I did some talking to people and all that. It's been all right, actually. That's been pretty... I don't know, I always feel like some sort of sham. Like, hey, do you want to come on my podcast? Like, I feel like, why would you want to come on my podcast? And then people say, yeah, I'd love to. It looks like fun. It's like, really? If you listen to this? You know, but no, it's really good. I really enjoyed the... I think when I started it, I thought it was going to be a little more highbrow than it is. So I thought it was going to be intellectual conversation about the creative process and all that. And then I realised it was actually...
Presented by you.
Presented by me, yeah. But as soon as I recorded the first one, it was quite interesting. Right? It was with a game developer called Mike Bithell, who Pips just worked with, actually, just recently. They've done a radio drama together. Mm. But it was more like two creators just talking about a bit about like the process and the business of making things. But also, it was that shared, like, imposter syndrome comes up every two episodes and all that. Because we all feel it. Like, everyone who puts things out feels that same way, that maybe they don't deserve it or whatever.
I spoke about this yesterday to someone else, and I can't help but think, I don't know if it's... If you're working class and from Essex, and you involve yourself in the creative industries...
Yeah,
you can't. I've always had it. You know.
Yeah, it's not like it's still. My dad still doesn't. My mum and dad went to one Dan and Pip gig in 1,000. My dad's never listened to the podcast. Like, I get to this day when are you going to get a real job? You know that still to this very day, and it is just because in his mind, growing up. Like in Corringham, that isn't a real job. That's not a real thing, you know. Like building ships is a real thing, fixing cars and all that. And I do get it, and I do think it adds to it. Like it does seem really weird when you grow up in Essex, especially like some of the jobs I did, like working in Basildon Hospital laundry and all that. You dare to dream not to be there, but. The only people who get to do it are the ones who actually let themselves dream, take the risk,
do
the thing. Now, you chance are you're going to fail. Like, the majority of people aren't ever going to do more than a few gigs around the town or whatever, but you don't know if you don't try. Maybe you're actually good, you know? I'm still trying to work out if I'm good at podcasting. It's only 33 episodes. I'm still new.
I think you're smashing it, Dan.
I'm enjoying it. I definitely enjoy it. The whole, like, you've obviously fucking loved the podcast thing. You got three of them now.
Oh God, I'm doing way too many podcasts, but it's just because it's nice to chat it's just something that age doesn't affect it.
Yeah.
I can't be in a lot of rock star anymore, and I'm the elderly DJ in the nightclub now. And whereas podcasts, no one can see me, so that's all right. But I like that.
I think it's a funny thing as well, like with the Essex thing. we have that boys don't cry bloke thing. Like, everyone in the UK has it, but I think it's very... it's put into, like, proper sharp relief in Essex. Yet, if you go watch West Ham with a group of lads, someone's going to cry. Everyone's going, oh, mate, that was fucking beautiful. See that goal? And it's like, it's weird how we share our emotions without realising we're doing it. And conversation's a big part of that. I think I've had some of the most kind of revealing conversations with blokes in pubs without deliberately meaning to do it, you know? Like, while you're gently ribbing each other and that, someone will share a little nugget of truth. And that's all conversations are for, aren't they? Just for nuggets. Oh, I miss nuggets. Do you miss nuggets?
Well, I still eat meat. Like, I don't mind it.
Oh, no, I've got no access to nuggets.
Oh, right.
Unless I went... I could buy some frozen nuggets, I suppose.
Yeah.
That doesn't appeal. I want someone to make my nuggets for me.
Thanks, Dan. There you go. Thank you very much, Dan Lesac. I think I forgot to thank him at the beginning. Not Dan. I've thanked him already. I want to thank 76, because 76 had to... paste this together to make it sound seamless. So how this works is Dan records his audio completely separate, as do I. We have like our laptops and we've got our headphones on and we're chatting, but we've also got microphones going into something else to record our standalone vocals, and then 76 has to kind of glue them together so they sound seamless. And that way, rather than doing them kind of Skype episodes, which can be a bit glitchy and can sometimes have a little delay, I'm trying to sort of enable it to sound as close to, you know, a studio style recording where we're sitting face to face as possible. And I think 76 has done a smashing job there. So huge thanks to him. Biggest thanks of all go to you lovely lot for listening. I'll be back next week. Like I said at the beginning, if you need another podcast, go and have a look in the archive. Other than that, go and get involved in Patreon, because there's over 100 episodes on there that have never been released to the public as well. Stay safe, and I'll see you very soon. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast. And it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. PodBibleMag.com.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.